Talking today with Ross Wilson from Texas Cattle Feeders Association. Ross, dog days of summer count upon us, and we are obviously trying to deal with a lot of heat stress in feedlot country right now, Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, the feedlots that you represent. Can you come give me an overview of how we are, right? You know, the kind of the status, the state of the union, if you want to, on our feedlot business right now in our Southern Plains region.
Okay, thank you, Ron. Always good to talk with you. You know, it's interesting times, which is an understatement, especially those folks that are feeding cattle know that even better than I do. To your question about heat and heat stress, you know, obviously we've had a lot of heat these last 3 weeks, but there's one really nice thing about our part of the cattle feeding world is that we've got a little bit of elevation, a little bit of lower humidities, and we're fortunate that we cool off in the evenings. Even those days that we get up over 100 in the evenings, we can cool back down into the, you know, high 60s, 70s. Very seldom do we stay above 80. So it gives these cattle an opportunity to cool off, and that's really an important part of that, of the, you know, the animal's ability to deal with that stress. To your question about the state of the industry, as your listeners know, cattle industry in general is going through some challenging times right now with the decline in this market, some of which we all could have forecast because of the herd expansion that's going on, which we've needed, especially in, you know, our part of the world, in Oklahoma and Texas and New Mexico, when we went through the drought in 11, 12, and 13, and then we're so blessed to get moisture in 14 and 15. So some of that is fundamentally driven. But one of the troubling aspects to our members, and we've been working on it a lot the last 6 to 8 months, is this issue of volatility potentially, and I'll emphasize potentially, brought on by high-frequency computer trading. Now, we believe strongly that the computers are making a difference, and there's a problem that needs to be addressed. So with NCBA's involvement and several state affiliates, we've been engaging the CME group in Chicago for the last several months to try to make improvements in this process. And while they've done a few things to their credit, they still continue to refuse to look at what we think may be the major source, and that is the computer trading driven by algorithms that have fundamentals built in to a degree, but not completely. And so I'm not saying that it's the old adage of garbage in, garbage out, because there is a lot of good data that you can plug in. But our concern is that without some type of, the Merck calls it velocity logic, some type of speed bump built into that system so that the computers don't just trade off of each other, mm-hmm. and it creates a momentum that goes further in one direction, either up or down, right. than it would have normally back in the old days of pit trading, that's going to continue to be a problem. So one of the things we've asked for is for the Merck to provide audit trail data back a year in the past, and then the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, and they provide this data today. It's just that the analytics haven't been done. So the CFTC or some outside third party working with the CFTC needs to do those analytics so that we can establish once and for all if there is computer abuse of the markets. We are not proposing that that there's anyone attempting to do anything illegal. But we are proposing that there may be a problem in the way these computers and algorithms work.
I guess if you went back a year, that would obviously capture this precipitous decline that we had about a year ago.
About in the fall of 2015, we want to be sure and capture that time frame and see just exactly what was going on. There is a consultant in Chicago that we've already, NCBA and this group of state affiliates, several state affiliates, have already been working with, a man named Eric Hunsader, Nanex Corporation. Mr. Hunsader already does this type of work, and in fact, interestingly enough, the SEC provided him funding about 3 or 4 months ago quite a bit of funding to look into some aberrations in their market. And I think it's very interesting that the new IEX exchange, stock exchange, that was just approved maybe a month ago by the SEC, has an automatic 350 millisecond speed bump or delay built into their computer trading. So there's something going on. Again, we're not saying it's malicious or willful, but there's a flaw in there, potentially is a flaw in the system. We just want the ability to analyze that and decide once and for all if that's the case. And then there are some other things, like some changes to the specs on the live cattle contract. There's some concerns that over time that contract has evolved to a position that the long side of that trading equation, whether they be the commercial or the speculative longs, have been leaving the market. And then some other things that need to be looked at. So there's a lot of time and effort being put into that because we truly believe that part of the volatility in this market is not fundamentally driven.
Right. Kind of along that same general line, going kind of that same pathway anyway, the continued struggle within the industry regarding enough liquidity in the cash marketplace. I know that there's been some efforts along those lines. Are we going to... You feel pretty good about we're starting to get our arms around that?
Maybe. That's a great answer, isn't it? So there, this whole issue of liquidity, of the percent of negotiated trade versus the formulas and the other alternative marketing arrangements that are being used. And those are very appropriate from the perspective that those are based truly to determine the value of that individual animal. Mm-hmm. So when you ask yourself about going back to selling on the average on the hoof, that's really not what we're talking about. It could be that. We're talking about having an adequate volume of negotiated trade that establishes the market because, as you well know, then a lot of these other alternative marketing agreements use that as right. their base, and then there's premiums and discounts based on the value of the individual animal. So there's a recent development. In fact, Jordan Levy here in Oklahoma City led, Jordan had help on this, but he actually led the development of this new electronic fed cattle exchange that Superior is hosting. It's a unique concept to be applied. It's been around in a lot of markets, but to apply it to the fed cattle industry. Unfortunately, we've had some IT glitches in that platform these last few weeks, and so they've had to pause that for a moment as they work these glitches out.
Right.
But we're hopeful that it'll be back online soon. We don't know yet whether it's going to be successful, but it needs to be given an adequate amount of time to test that theory and that model.
I guess if you can even get, 5, 10, 15,000 head weekly, that would help tremendously.
That would be a significant contribution to the negotiated trade. Yes, sir.
Down the road. In other words, we've seen obviously some structural changes within the feedlot business and the packers, which are kind of hand in hand with your feedlot members. We're seeing some changes in the Southern Plains, it seems like.
Yes, and of course, part of that is a result of that significantly tightened feeder cattle supply that came about as a result of the drought. So, when you go through that extended period of time with the drought and you shrink those supplies of feeder cattle, which are now thankfully rebuilding and coming back, you're going to see some changes. So fortunately, we haven't closed that many yards, but we've seen some yards operating on some very low occupancy levels. We've seen just recently this transition, this purchase by Freona Industries of a couple of the Cargill feed yards in Texas. So whether it's at the smaller end of the scale or at the larger end of the scale, we continue to see change. We still, we've got to compete with what some of our members would call, well, I think all of them would call, some subsidized feedstuffs in the Midwest, and I'm referring to the byproducts of the ethanol industry. But that is what it is. It's there. It's not going away. So we just have to compete with that situation. We have some climatic and other advantages in this part of the world. Our guys are very competitive. They're incredibly resilient. I continue to be amazed at their resiliency. And so this, you know, this will sort itself out, and we'll come to wherever the next plateau is going to be. To the Cargill-Friona thing, you know, Cargill, is, if you've watched their investments over the course of the last 1 to 2 years, they've been focused mainly on value-added packing and processing, and that's the business model that they seem to be pursuing. So I wish them success. I'm glad that Friona was there to acquire those yards, because they're very good at what they do, and that's procuring cattle that fit into an efficient feeding system to get those into the, you know, into the packing plants. So I think that's gonna all work out well.
One last question, Ross, and it has to do kind of maybe kind of a big picture. We're seeing a lot of questions about transparency by consumers. We're seeing, obviously, a desire to have, you know, a great tasting product. Obviously, we're getting a lot of that data back through the checkoff efforts. You know, what are your members trying to do to try to answer the call of transparency and the need to know, or the desire to know more about where, in this case, their beef comes from?
That's a really great question. It's a significant challenge. It's an important challenge. It's an important transition that we need to work through. To your point, there's no denying we see it every day. We see it in the stores. We see it through social media. We see it in the analytics that are being done about how much more people want to know about their food. And we get that. So, you know, whether it's the Beef Quality Assurance Program and improvements made in that to do things in a way that consumers have strong feelings about, and when they reflect those feelings in their purchasing decisions, then we better pay attention. And that's this transition that we're working through. It's also reflected in changes that we're making, the individual feed yards are making within their own operations, and it's reflecting itself within the willingness of a lot of these ranchers and stocker operators and feed yards, and we've got our own individual members that are perfect examples of engaging in social media in a very aggressive way, that are tweeting on a fairly regular basis and using other Facebooks and other things, Facebook, to communicate what they do every day at the yards. And it's being well received by consumers. And I think it's a part of this changing world that we live in.
When you first took the job, would you imagine that you would be saying a tweet or tweeting in an interview?
Absolutely not. I am not the most food sensitive person. My food sensitivity level on that barometer is not very high. So I've had to evolve my own thinking to the point that people are that interested in how food is produced. I'm interested in buying good food and consuming it. And I don't think that much back into the production chain. But part of that reason, Ron, and finally the light went off, is that I grew up in the production chain. So it's second nature to a lot of us in the beef business. So we are developing a significant appreciation for the new thought process of our consumers, the younger, the millennials and other generations. That's our future. And we need to be able to address their desire for knowledge and some of the misinformation that's out there, some of it intentionally, because we all know there are organizations, activist groups, that continue to try to mislead the consumer, and we've got to be there to rebut that.